and every priest stands day after day at his service, offering again and again the same sacrifices. But when Christ has offered all time a single sacrifice for sin, he sat at the right hand of God. Her grandson, Braden, had a high-o time last Saturday at Science Central. If you've never been there, it's really a remarkable place with all kinds of fun, engaging activities to teach the kids some basic lessons of science. And one of the favorites is this sliding board, a spiral tubular slide that goes down three stories. On previous visits, Braden had a cow because his sisters got to go and he didn't because he wasn't taller than the measuring stick. And he would moan and he would stomp his feet. I'm never going to get to ride that stupid slide. But in 1 year, guess what happened? Braden grew. Now he measures up. Performance evaluations are never fun. Truth be told, I would rather have a root canal than go through an evaluation. Years ago, our district minister used an evaluation tool which was graded numerically. On a scale of 1 to 5, grade the pastor's sermon content. Did the sermon enable the congregation to better grasp the gospel? Did the sermon reflect careful and thorough preparation? Does the pastor conduct himself in a sensitive, professional manner in hospital visitations? And so all the evaluations are collected from everyone who filled them out. The numbers were crunched. And then you were given your score. Now, I can see how that works if you make your living making widgets. I cranked out so many widgets in this amount of time, and they were of this quality. But we all struggled with that because, you know, how do you attach numbers to ministry? Well, how's your preaching going these days, David? Well, it's okay, I guess. My congregation says I'm a 4.1. Pastoral calling, however, I'm 2.5. Said there's room for improvement there. We were so glad when we got a new DE, not because we just wanted a new DE, because with a new DE, we got a different kind of evaluation, a more helpful one, where I sat down with the pastoral advisory committee, and we talked 2 or 3 hours having a conversation about how things are going with the pastor, and how does he or she evaluate his work, what do we have to say about the congregation and how do we evaluate their work? It was a much healthier way of going about it, but I don't care what tool you use. Being evaluated ties my stomach in knots. I don't like to see whether I measure up or not. You know, we all worry our way through life wondering if we measure up. If you're going to be good, how good is good enough? Will mommy withhold her love for me if I make her angry? Will I live up to my dad's expectations? Will I pass the test? Will I have enough credits to graduate? What do I have to do to be on everybody's good side? Do I love God with my heart, soul, mind, and strength in my whole being? Do I pray without ceasing? Am I perfect even as the Heavenly Father is perfect? And the answer, of course, is no. And these are the questions that hound us all life long. And it's the reason we have religion. Religion gives us a way of coping with the question, am I acceptable? Given what God knows about our frail, fallen state, will God one day welcome me with open arms or slam the gates of heaven in my face? See, religion offers us a way to be right with God. It says if we perform certain good works, if we eat fish on Friday, if we go to church Sunday morning, if we don't mow the lawn on Sunday afternoon, and if we walk 10,000 steps every day and eat a Mediterranean diet, then we will be okay. Now, religion serves a useful purpose. It's good for you, but don't let Jesus hear you say that. Jesus was not a fan of religion. As a matter of fact, he despised it. The Sermon on the Mount, he says, you have heard about that old-time religion, but I say to you. Now, let's not totally trash religion. I mean, there are important religious observances that are a part of Christianity as they are a part of every religion. But Jesus gives us something more than observances. You see, Christianity isn't a religion at all, and that may come as a surprise to some of you, because religion promises to make us right before God. Religion came into being because every person of every age in every culture has this sense of something beyond themselves. The reformer John Calvin says everybody, regardless of who they are or where they are from, has this yearning for God, and we want to know if we are acceptable or not. And if our lives are to have meaning, and if we are to survive life and survive death, then something must be done. We must measure up. We must do certain things before God will look favorably upon us. Religion tells us that we are in trouble the moment we slip from the womb. Before the first diaper is pinned on us, it says that we are tainted, and that God treats us as a loving father to the extent that we do what religion says must be done. Salvation is not a gift. Salvation is something that is earned. And we expend all kinds of tremendous effort trying to be good and doing right, because life is a test we must pass. Life is a race we must win. Life is a minefield through which we must carefully walk and not be blown to smithereens. You see, the first concern of religion is with us. As someone said, with religion, you pick up the tab. Now, it needs to be said that this religion not only worships God, because there are lesser gods as well. Maybe your God is oat bran, or wheat germ, or all organic, or locally grown, or maybe it's Weight Watchers. Maybe you seek salvation by eating kale or running 30 miles a week. Maybe your God is guns, a football team, going vegan, worshiping the almighty dollar. Your God may even be not believing in God, and you have to really work hard at that one. See, religion offers a promise it cannot fulfill, because the more we try to fulfill it, the more miserable we will become. And whenever we come to worship, we'll never get it right, because the lesser gods jerk us all around. You know, just as soon as we get this non-dairy diet down pat, a new study comes along and says the former study was wrong, and it's actually good to feed your kids whole milk. And you know how it goes with each one conflicts the other, and we're going back and forth. What do we need to do to live a long and healthy life? And we become obsessed about such things. We never win. We can never do enough. We are disappointments to ourselves, and we are disappointments to God, and that, unfortunately, is reinforced in too many churches. There was a dear couple in a church I served that did so many wonderful things for so many people. They were good, good people. But sometimes in the worst sense of the word. They had a abnormality, I call it ROC, religiously obsessive and compulsive. You would go into their home and you see they only had Christian art on the walls and Bible quotes posted everywhere. They only went to Christian concerts or films. They only subscribed to Christian magazines. They were always running errands for God. Boy, aren't they something. Just look at them go, go, go. They attend all church events, even though a particular meeting really didn't pertain to them. They were there anyway, and they got on the phone to call people to say, make sure you go to that meeting too. They spent all their vacations going on mission trips. Both of them would get on the phone and call me to discuss some important issue in the church or talk about my ministry and what I should be doing. And to add insult to injury, they would call at 6:30 in the morning. I mean, who does something like that? Once a month, he wanted me to meet him at Bob Evans for breakfast, 7 o'clock. He wanted to discuss some important issues like, David, what are we going to do to grow the church? I said, I have no idea at this hour of the morning what we're going to do. I'm still asleep, for the Lord's sake. When invited into their home for a meal, you had devotions before the peas were passed. Every get-together had to have a spiritual dimension, and they never, ever said it. But I think that they thought the church would be a much better place if the rest of us were as compulsive as they were. People were reluctant to go into their homes because they said when they left, they had this feeling that they didn't measure up, that they weren't doing enough, that we weren't practicing it right. There's always the need to do more and to do better. You know, and if the truth be told, I'll bet you this couple felt the same thing. What am I going to do? There has to be something more. So they tried harder, and the harder they tried, the more they became aware of their own imperfections, and the more they were aware of that, they tried it all the harder. I guess what I'm saying to you today is, please don't cling to your religion. Let it go. We can't make it right. If we had the power to do that, there wouldn't have been a reason for Jesus to come in the first place. But in Jesus, you see, God has made it right. Jesus' sacrifice did what all that running around could never do. Let's go back to that passage again, that wonderful passage from Hebrews. And every priest stands day after day offering the same sacrifices again and again. And when Christ had offered a single sacrifice, he sat down at the right hand of God. Now notice it says that the priest stood. They stood. They didn't have time to sit. They were too busy running back and forth between sinners and God's justice and offering the sacrifices that was going to make it okay until the next day when they fouled up again, we would have to sacrifice something else. Atoning for Bill Leverton's or Lori Lynn's sin would be enough to keep two priests working 24/7. It goes on and it goes on. You see, their weariness was a testimony to the futility of their religion. The priest stood, but notice what it says about Jesus. When Christ had offered his single sacrifice, he sat down at the hand of God. He sat down. He had time to do that. Remember the story of when he gave his first sermon in his home synagogue, and he opened it, he read from the scroll of Isaiah, and then Luke says he sat down and began to teach them. The rabbis always taught from being seated. You knew something important was going to be said when they sat down. And so while the religion errand boys ran themselves ragged, Jesus sat on the throne next to his Father, his work accomplished, and his desire being that we quit trying so hard. I'm sorry to tell you this, but nothing we do on a Sunday morning influences God one way or another. Do you ever think about that? We don't influence God by what we do. What we engage in here is theater. Drama, mystery. It's here that we gather before the amazing grace of God and offer the kind of gift that God wants and God desires, and that is grateful, glorious, gratuitous praise for all that God has done in our lives. Yom Kippur is the Jewish Day of Atonement. Rabbi Harold Kushner, who wrote that wonderful little book, When Bad Things Happen to Good People, it was his first Sunday back in the pulpit after the death of his 14-year-old son. And everyone was waiting patiently for what he would say, what Aaron's death meant to him and what his life meant. But that day, instead of choosing a passage from the Bible, he took his text from a children's book called The Missing Piece. Any of you know that? Once there was a circle that was missing a triangle that had been cut from it, and the circle wanted to be whole again. The circle set out on a journey all over the world to find his missing piece, but it took a long time, you see, because he rolled slowly. But because he rolled slowly, he had the chance to behold the beauty of the world and the smell of flowers, and he chatted with butterflies, and he basked in the sun, and along the road, there were other shapes lying there, but they were either too small or too big. A lot of them were squares, and others were too pointy, and they would never fit, and so the circle kept rolling until one day he found a piece that fit perfectly. So whistling a happy tune, he secured that pie shape into it, and off he rolled. Now he was perfect. And because he was perfect, he could go so much faster than before. In fact, he rolled so fast, too fast, to smell the flowers, to chat with the butterflies, and to bask in the glories and the wonders of the world. Realizing that the world looked very different at high speed, the circle stopped, and he left the pie-shaped piece by the road and went on rolling slowly in search of his missing part. Harold Kushner says that story helped him understand that we are sometimes more whole when we are incomplete. We are more whole sometimes when something is missing. As Jesus said, it's those who die that shall live. And he said, wholeness comes to a person who has come to terms with his limitations, to know what he can do and what God can do, and knows who he is and what he can do and what he cannot do. If you want to read that remarkable story, get his book, How Good is Good Enough. Kermit was a member of the church, a dear friend, a voracious reader, and a recovering alcoholic. Kermit was a relative of Rebecca's. She knows this story well. During his recovery, he was always wanting me to give him books. Give me another book this week. What should I read? He especially loved those that had to do with the spiritual life and personal transformation. And one day I gave him a book by a theologian named Paul Tillich. It was a theologian who talked about the fact that God's grace is greater than all of our sin. And the author said, we can't transform ourselves. Only a stroke of God's grace can do that. Grace, he says, when we are in great pain and restlessness, when we feel our lives are hopeless and empty, when our weakness and lack of direction becomes intolerable, it strikes when our longing for perfection doesn't appear and the old compulsions reign over us. And then he said, sometimes a light breaks through into our darkness, and it is as though there were a voice saying. And I know these words so well because my beloved college professor and mentor T. Wayne Raymond made us memorize it. You are accepted, the voice says. You are accepted, accepted by that which is greater than you and the name of which you do not know. Do not ask for the name now. Perhaps you will get it later. Do not try to do anything now. Perhaps later you will do much. Do not seek for anything, nor perform anything, nor intend anything. Simply accept the fact that you are accepted, because God demands nothing of this experience. Nothing but acceptance. When Kermit returned my books, they were full of sticky notes. He plastered them on a page that really caught his attention. And he would write a little message in there, and we need to discuss this sometime. And when it came to this passage, that you are accepted by that which is greater than you and the name of which you do not know, he scrawled in there, David. Oh my, how different my life would have been if someone had told me that 40 years ago. And the priests stand at their office day after day, offering the same sacrifices again and again. But Jesus, with the single sacrifice he made to forgive our sins, is seated at the right hand of God to reign forever and to forever, and to help us remember to roll slowly, to let go of anything that is superfluous to the Christian life, to let go of religion, to let go of this stupid notion that we can influence God one way or another. Simply accept the fact that you are accepted.